is Haight versus Huhn.
Wynn, I believe.
Wynn. Well, I'm showing my cultural illiteracy. I'm sorry.
I looked it up. That's what I'm guessing. May it please the court, I'm Sarah Robsky on behalf of Mr. Wynn this morning. And I would like to reserve 3 minutes. Thank you. And this morning we are requesting this court to reverse and remand Mr. Wynn's convictions for possession with intent to manufacture or deliver cocaine and for conspiracy to possess with intent to manufacture or deliver cocaine. Possession with intent to manufacture or deliver a controlled substance is an alternative means offense. The state acknowledges that unlawful manufacture of drugs is a separate and distinct offense from unlawful delivery of drugs. Accordingly, possession with intent to commit those two separate crimes must also be two separate crimes or an alternative means, as the legislature has phrased it, of committing a single offense.
So is it two ways of committing the offense?
Yes. Two alternative means of committing. 6950-401 sets forth three separate offenses, manufacture, delivery, and possession with intent to commit those two offenses. And we're submitting that the third offense is an alternative means offense. It involves two separate mens rea, the intent to deliver versus the intent to manufacture. Manufacture and deliver are separately defined, and they were separately defined for this jury. Manufacture pertaining to the production, processing, or repackaging of the product, whereas deliver refers more simply to the transfer of the product from one person to another. And there are cases, I cited several in my reply brief, Chetty and McCabe, where the defendant was charged simply with unlawful possession with intent to deliver only and not manufacture at all. The state relies on Smith, a 2007 case, in which case the court interpreted the common law definition of assault that was worded in the disjunctive. And the court found that the use of the disjunctive in a definition rather than the substance of offense doesn't necessarily create an alternative means offense. But that's not the issue before the court here. I'm not challenging the use of the disjunctive in the definitions of manufacture, deliver, and both of those are phrased in the disjunctive. Therefore, Smith is not informative to here.
Is it possible to define a crime using a disjunctive and not create alternative means?
I believe it is, yes.
And what would distinguish that description of the crime from the ones before us?
In this case, because it is talking about two completely separate crimes, that if you take out the possession with intent, you have manufacture, which is a completely separate conduct, intent, etc., than the delivery part is. There are, I'll have to look at my brief, but cases where, like the common law definition of assault, where there are several different ways of committing the assault. But assault is a specific crime, as is manufacture or deliver. If you're going to combine two...
Now the possession is, with the intent to either or. And that's the problem here. The question probably has to be phrased in the affirmative, and that is, what is an alternative means crime? Let's start there.
Okay.
Because I'm not sure there's an answer to that that makes any sense, but nevertheless, let's try to make some sense out of it. Otherwise, this is just going to become sort of nonsense as we wander through the statutes in various cases. So what is an alternative means crime?
Well, as the state referred to the aren't factors, the four aren't factors, which are non-exclusive, but looking at the title of the act, the title of the act, whether there's a readily perceivable connection, whether the acts are consistent and not repugnant to each other, and whether the acts are inherent in the same transaction.
Aren't these aren't even acts. These are the intent. The act is the possession. That's the difficulty I'm having here. In other words, the act is possession with, and in fact, frequently it's referred to in the short version, possession with intent.
Yes.
Which may be accurate, frankly, from the standpoint of the history of these statutes and the history of the legislature enactments with regard to these statutes. And I'm probably more familiar with the history than most people in this courtroom, but then that's just an accident of age. But nevertheless, that's the way it's been referred to for years and years.
Oh, absolutely.
With intent. So if you have the possession and you have the intent, it doesn't matter whether it's to manufacture or in this case, to manufacture or to deliver.
And all due respect, I would disagree, because I think
On what basis?
Because of the separate intents, very separate intents.
Well, what case law do we have to support that kind of parsing out in this circumstance? What makes possession with intent to manufacture and possession with intent to deliver separate crimes? In other words, we're back to what is an alternative means crime.
Yes, and I mean, I would
those,
just...
Those factors are like every litany of the Supreme Court writes. They really don't help us at all.
Ever. It really doesn't, no. Because you can argue both sides for that, because it may have made sense under that circumstance, but it doesn't particularly here. I would submit that where there is a separate intent, that would substitute for what the Supreme Court in this case was talking about, acts, that you cannot have two separate intents within a single offense without making that alternative means.
We have case law that says we focus on the act that is the criminal conduct as opposed to what's in the actor's head to determine whether something is an alternative means crime. Can you cite to us a case where the act is the same for two alternative means and the only distinction is the mens rea?
I don't have that. I will be happy to look for that, see if I can find that and file it with the court later. I'm sorry,
Okay, we're not familiar with one.
No, and I can't think of one right now either. However, assuming this is an alternative means offense, I would also submit that there was absolutely no evidence of intent, possession with intent to manufacture. That was simply generalizations about what people do with this quantity of cocaine rather than specific to this particular case.
All right, on that point, what does that mean? I mean, you have an expert who's testifying with regard to a subject on which he is apparently qualified.
Yes.
I'm not saying I'm particularly impressed with the quality of this testimony, but nevertheless, there it is. And that was found by the trial judge to be sufficient for reasonable minds to reach a conclusion that because this person, I mean, do this as the Socrates syllogism, if you wish. I did it a couple of ways, but it's not unsound. It is a logical syllogism that one can follow, and that is that all persons who have this quantity of cocaine in these circumstances intend to either manufacture or deliver, and then by cutting it, they manufacture it. A, B, C, so you get to it. Mr. Wynn is one of those, therefore, he intended. I mean, that's the logical syllogism. What's the matter with that?
Because there was no evidence that these two individuals intended to manufacture. He said pretty much everybody does that, and that simply is not substantial evidence.
So it isn't all, it's some, is what you're contending. The evidence is that some, but not all.
But not these two. In fact, the very bait that was used in this case was found as packaged at the Canadian-American border, presumably going to be smuggled. And the testimony in this case was that the detective understood that the cocaine was going to end up in Canada, and that a kilo of cocaine would sell for more money in Canada than the United States. He could make his profit by smuggling it rather than repackaging. And the vehicles were searched.
You've answered Judge Corbett's
okay.
question. Do you want to go into your rebuttal time?
No, thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Eric Peterson from the Skagit County Prosecutor's Office, and I struggled with the same thing that you were looking at, Judge Gross, with respect to how do you evaluate what is an alternative means crime within the structures that we have from our state. I looked, the only really significant authority I could pull was the ARNT factors and in evaluating what amounts to an alternative means crime. Looking at those, we have a situation where we have, within the statute, manufacture, delivery, or possession with intent to manufacture or deliver. Now, the question that's been posed, I think, in this case, and the reason I brought this to the court's attention was because when reading the brief, it jumped past the appellant's opening brief jumped past that analysis and just assumed that these were alternative means of possession with intent to manufacture or delivery. And I couldn't find a case law that addressed that particular factor. Now, counsel provided one case in rebuttal, and I think they actually mentioned it in their initial opening brief, State versus Fernandez, involving a drug house situation where there was a different possession with intent, or excuse me, maintaining the drug house with intent to use or for the purpose of storing a controlled substance. But in Fernandez, They jumped right past and didn't even analyze whether or not those were alternative means, because it didn't appear to even be contested at that level about whether or not these were alternative mean crimes. So I think what you need to do, and I think the appropriate thing in evaluating alternative means, is what is the intent of the individual with respect to the transaction, which is the result of, you know, results in the criminal charges. Here, where a delivery is being arranged by Mr. Nguyen. He's set it up initially, developed confidence with the case agent, De La Cruz, had multiple meetings with him, phone calls with him, to set up these transactions. So
we understand that. Where is the evidence that he knew of or an accomplice was going to manufacture, other than this generalized testimony from the expert?
What
do we have? What evidence?
Well, if you chose to make that decision and imply that you have to ignore the information from the case agent, which I don't think is appropriate in evaluating the insufficiency of the evidence.
What did he say?
Agent Belanger, who attested, that's the expert, excuse me, I think, okay. I'm going to say case agent. Agent Belanger.
It just doesn't say anything. Does it say all or does it say some?
But you need to evaluate the information that he provides about what this is that they're dealing with. A civilian who comes into court who doesn't know about, acts as a jury.
That's silly. That's just a silly statement, Counselor. Find me a civilian that doesn't know about drugs. That would be somebody that doesn't watch television, and maybe in your kind of, you can find somebody like that. But apart from that, what use is this testimony? Because it's not particularized. It does not identify, nor logically does it contain any information with respect to these individuals.
I have to disagree with my interpretation
of the
evidence.
Tell me what he says, because I've read it about four times, and I don't see it. So what have I missed? Tell me what he says.
The type of drugs that are involved here and the manner in which they're packaged are drugs which have a specific, particular purpose in the drug hierarchy. They're drugs
What about these individuals? What about Mr. Nguyen? What's the evidence that Mr. Nguyen intended these drugs to be?
He arranged the transaction for a very expensive package of drugs.
With delivery. Yes,
right.
Got him.
Correct.
Go ahead. I'm
sorry. And what happens once...
Let me put Judge Gross's question a little bit differently. Is expert testimony that this is the way something is done in an industry, standing alone, sufficient evidence of a particular individual's circumstance and intent beyond a reasonable doubt?
The state's position is that because you evaluate sufficiency of the evidence and drawing logical inferences in favor of the state, you can rely on the expert information, the evidence brought forth by the expert, about what is done with this type of packaged drugs.
Is it ever sufficient to prove what one person intended to prove what people generally intend?
Yes, the state's position that it is. I was getting because of the fact that that's what is done with
okay,
this type of...
Okay, you keep saying that's what's done. Why don't you be more specific? How is it packaged that leads us to the conclusion that it was being prepared for manufacturing?
Exclusively.
Exclusively. Don't talk to us about delivery. Tell us what the evidence is about manufacturing. Intent to manufacture. What is the evidence that is in the record related to intent to manufacture?
The evidence in the record is from Agent Belanger, from the
what
expert testimony
say?
About what is done.
What is
with
you keep saying what is done. What do you mean by that?
That drugs of this purity and price and quantity are purchased with the intent in the drug manufacturing chain to be repackaged, to be sold, to increase the value. That's the whole reason why drug deals occur, is because there is this chain of manufacturing that occurs. And it's part of a whole chain. You deliver the drugs.
Did he describe the chain of manufacturing?
Agent Belanger described where this is in the drug hierarchy, that this is not a street-level deal. This is a deal done at a level where the drugs are then being used to cut and cut for other subsequent users to use in the chain. Every person,
so
the state's position is...
every step in the chain, there never is a simple sale of the package received to the buyer in the same package. Is that his testimony?
Could there be a situation where there is just a...
Counsel has suggested that her client could have smuggled this across the Canadian border and sold the same package that was received from the seller in the same packaging and made a profit. Is that inconsistent with the agent's testimony?
No, I don't believe it is. And I think what you have to look at is there's accomplice liability that's charged here as well. He's charged as an accomplice with Mr. Mack.
Okay, but if it's sold across the border in the same package, none of the people in this transaction are going to be involved. There wasn't a charge that he was an accomplice with somebody in Canada, for example, who was going to cut the drug.
This is not that situation. Apparently, the drugs were going the other direction in this particular case, was being sent to Canada. But it's regardless, if you have a situation where a person is a part of the chain that goes on with manufacturing of drugs, because that's the profit that comes from the activity.
Why did you charge this case with that prong? I mean, possession seems like if you prove possession, you've proved what you claim is necessary to prove manufacture, and you just create a problem for yourself.
Assuming that you follow the alternative means argument and say that there is a separate alternative means.
Whether it's right or wrong, it's out there and creates a problem for you.
I understand it creates the arguments that are available, but I think in a particular case, when you have this size and quantity of drugs, that charging in this manner is an appropriate way to deal with and explain to the jury what this transaction is in the process of a drug dealing and manufacturing. Because dealing and manufacturing, going back to whether or not their alternative means are from the state's position and here in the same.
You have to have an accomplice that's identified. You can't be an accomplice to some nebulous concept of how drug deals are made. And the problem is, and you've said it yourself, and you want me to, I will. I'll give you a little lecture on logic. And it's very simple. You can contemplate, I gave you the reference. It's the classic. All men are mortal. Socrates is a man. Therefore, he's mortal. Why? You have a distributed middle term. If it's some men are mortal, now you don't have a distributed middle term. So you can never have a logical conclusion that is an unsound syllogism. Therefore, you can have all the evidence in the world that's general, but you never have a distributed middle term. It's unsound, therefore no logical inference in favor of the state. That's the point. Where are we here with this testimony? He did not say, and you had no evidence that, the people receiving this package were going to do what with it? Maybe they were going to transfer it themselves. And you had overwhelming evidence of delivery. So I don't know why you got yourself into this mess. It's probably not the case in which to argue this, but do you understand what I'm saying about logical inferences?
I understand what you're saying, that sometimes, and I was down here not too long ago on a case involving an animal who was subject to an animal cruelty charge and whether or not all the alternative means were applicable. Well, this is another example of that, a different type of example of the same situation. But from the state's perspective in this case, because the court can draw and take, and the jury as a trier of fact can draw rational inferences from the evidence presented, including the state's position as the testimony of the expert with respect to the manufacturing process, that there was sufficient evidence of that alternative means, we would ask the court to affirm the convictions and sentence.
Thank you, counsel.
Just very briefly back to the alternative means questions. This does infringe on the defendant's or all defendants' right to a unanimous verdict, and therefore I do urge this court to find that the separate intents, that there are separate intents even once you get past the possession, as it is commonly referred to, possession with intent. The question is intent to do what? And when you have separate intents, I do submit you have alternative means. If the court has any other questions?
I don't think we do. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much.